the Agile brand.
Welcome to Season 6 of The Agile Brand, where we discuss marketing technology and customer experience trends, insights, and ideas with enterprise and technology platform leaders. We focus on the people, processes, data, and platforms that make brands successful, scalable, customer-focused, and sustainable. This is what makes an Agile brand. I'm your host, Greg Kilstrom, advising Fortune 1000 brands on MarTech, marketing operations, and CX, best-selling author and speaker. The Agile Brand Podcast is brought to you by Tech Systems, an industry leader in full-stack technology services, talent services, and real-world application. For more information, go to teksystems.com. Before we get started, I wanted to let you know that my latest book, Priority is Action, 7 Principles for Better Strategies, Decisions, and Outcomes, is now available. In it, I give ideas and insights for leaders and teams that need to make meaningful progress on their priorities. After all, our priorities are what we do, not what we say we'd like to do. You can find Priority is Action on Amazon or learn more on my website, gregkilstrom.com. Now let's get on to the show. In the fast-paced business environment we all know too well, setting the right goals and aligning incentives across an organization can be the key to driving successful outcomes, whether during a major transformation or through continuous iterative improvements. Joining us to explore this topic is Michael Vanderhoof, Director of Product Management at Charles Schwab. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hi, Greg. Thanks. Really glad to be here.
Yeah, looking forward to talking about this with you. Why don't we get started with you sharing a little bit about your role at Charles Schwab and, you know, how it relates to this topic of aligning goals and incentives within the company.
Yeah, so I've been at Schwab for about 5 years. During my time there, I first came in to stand up and lead their first digital experimentation program, and I took over and led their digital data capture team as well. And currently, I'm now leading the digital content publishing team, as well as a slice of like overall personalization. So I sort of own a capability that provides personalized content recommendations. That's sort of a nascent technology that we're continuing to scale out within the organization. I think as far as like sort of my experience at Schwab and how that sort of relates to the topic at hand, and I have previous experience from other organizations that I've been in, sort of been in this role of having to come in and take up a new, whether it's a new technology or a new capability or a new internal service from a product standpoint, and looking and working to drive that within the organization. And so a lot around, you think about cross-team and cross-department alignment, the idea of goals and incentives, and how do you sort of move these things forward across multiple teams has been a very important part, or at least a key part of my experience for the last 10 or 15 years.
Great. Well, yeah, so let's dive in here. And we're going to start by talking about exploring goal alignment and incentives and talk about, you know, specifically, we've got a lot of people listening from enterprise organizations. So I'm going to talk about that specifically in the enterprise. And so, you know, this is alignment of goals and incentives, definitely a crucial yet a challenging one. So especially in enterprises where different teams may have very diverse objectives. So let's start by, you know, could you help us, you know, just clarify, you know, what are some of the common challenges that many may face in aligning goals and incentives across these different departments, like product, tech, others? You know, how can these challenges affect collaboration and operational efficiency?
Sure. I think first, just to sort of give a little of the angle that I've normally found myself in and the way that I'm approaching this from is, as I sort of mentioned before, I've come in and lead sort of an internal service. So this is from others out there who may be familiar, where you provide something to other product teams or other teams within the organization. Like you provide a service to them. So you have like this idea of internal customer supplier relationships and whatnot. So just sort of set the stage. I think as we, you know, the common challenges that I've sort of seen in my experience around goals and incentive alignment, like a common theme that may be familiar to others is this idea of a bit of a tug of war sometimes between product org and the tech org in terms of like whose hand is really on the tiller, like who's steering the ship when it comes to like the client experience and how we sort of go to market and what that looks like. And so because there can sometimes be a little bit of tension there, as I've sort of evaluated that and looked at it, it seems a lot to have to do with, you know, the tech org may have their goals and outcomes that they're driving against, and the product has theirs. And while everyone wants to aim towards, you know, a good client experience, the way they get there can be different. And so you often arrive at this place where teams find themselves, you know, at maybe at best sort of misaligned, or at worst, they have these goals or outcomes that are almost diametrically opposed to each other, and they sort of prevent each other from moving forward. So I think that's a real interesting area that comes up sort of quite a bit that I've been working on my own to, you know, to sort of like figure out how do you navigate that appropriately. And then at the same time, you know, I've been mindful of the impacts that has in actually achieving results.
Yeah. So then what do you do about it? You know, it's a big question, I realize, but you know, what strategies have you seen be effective for, you know, overcoming some of these challenges and really fostering a culture that supports alignment of these goals and shared success?
So that's a real hairy question. So, you know, in a perfect world, there would be clear lines of ownership between, you know, goals and outcomes that then the teams can anchor against. But I think in reality, approaches that I've looked at sort of fall into two groups, and I'm biased towards one more than the other, which I'll share. But I think in terms of strategies to overcome this misalignment, it's use existing channels and processes that are already available. So oftentimes, particularly like an enterprise, there's probably there's governance processes. Usually there's a channel to an exec team to help align around whether larger initiative goals and how they fit into broader strategies.
Yeah.
Even, you know, down to the OKR level and how you can use that if your organization uses that, how to use OKRs to drive sort of cross team alignment. This can be time consuming and it can be a little difficult because you usually have to get several senior or exec leaders on the same page and sort of drive that notional alignment. But my feeling is that's a much more solid and foundational way towards driving and unlocking these blockers that may be working as obstacles to what you're trying to achieve with your product or with your service. Yeah. The other approach that I've seen other folks do or that may work, although I'm not a fan of it, is going down the relationship route, right? So influencing others, building upon relationships. I think of them often as sort of horse trading or the sort of backroom deals, you know what I mean? Where you work with others in order to sort of drive your agenda forward. And, you know, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours sort of deal. I think that's an unfortunate way of approaching it personally, because I don't think good business models are built upon backroom deals. I think following a clear alignment, you know, that ladders down from organizational strategy to department to, you know, to the product or area is a good way of driving long-term sustainable alignment and success.
Yeah. Well, and also, you know, you mentioned the importance of leadership being involved. I mean, I think at the end of the day, you know, in that second scenario, the horse trading scenario, it's like there's a point where that, at least in my experience, that breaks down when leadership is not aligned, because mm-hmm. you know, you're doing all these like kind of lateral moves and stuff like that. But you know, if leaders are not buying into it, at some point, some priority is going to overstep, and no matter what deals you've made, you're going to get overridden. I mean, would you say that's true?
Oh yeah, 100%. I'm definitely more of a process type person. I really like process and organizational structures and frameworks, because I think they create a much more objective approach to achieving, you know, the ultimate outcomes that the organization or the team is looking for. And when you move away from those, so back to the, you know, more relationship sort of aspect of things, it's very temporary and it's intangible. Yeah. And in the success of moving things forward becomes much more dependent on maybe the personalities involved, as opposed to, again, more objective measures about what do we want to do, and here's the broader strategy that everyone's aligned in, and then how we work within that framework to make sure everyone is moving in the same direction. Yeah. So that we're ultimately providing the right value for our end visitor or client or whatever the case may be.
So I want to switch topics a little bit. You know, you mentioned having some direct experience working with personalization, and, you know, I wanted to talk about, you know, and some other experimentation as well. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that, where, you know, I think there's a lot of people out there that are, while some organizations have established testing and experimentation and everything like that, there's a lot of organizations that are moving in this direction. And so, you know, they're adopting it and learning and learning from the process. And so, you know, I want to talk a little bit about how does adoption of digital experimentation and personalization into an established company that has is not used to this, you know, what do we need to keep in mind and take into account? And so, you know, first, let's start with maybe some of the challenges. You know, what kind of challenges does an organization that is just, you know, let's say dipping their toes in the water with personalization experimentation, what might they expect and you know, what kind of challenges do they face?
Yeah, I think this is a really fascinating area, you know, having been in that space for quite a while now. From what I've observed multiple times now, there can often be a disconnect between what's expected when a organization or a leadership team, you know, makes the decision to, hey, you know, digital experimentation, we should be doing that because they seen it somewhere, they went to a conference, or, you know, or personalization, we all know that we should be doing it because of all the benefits to our visitor and client.
Right.
But often there seems to be a thought that you purchase the technology and you flip that switch and suddenly, cool, now you've got experimentation or now you've got personalization. And I may be oversimplifying that a little bit, but I've observed that oftentimes there's a dissonance or a disconnect between the thought of what it's going to be like and the actual reality of what it means to stand something up. And just to provide a sort of a few examples there, having brought in experimentation in several places, I think that's a great transformative capability. And I like to use the analogy, it sort of shines a light in the dark corners, particularly in the corners of an organization's tech architecture, as well as their data infrastructure. Mm. So as you think about particularly browser side experimentation, where you're sort of manipulating pages and experiences within the browser, the team was working off the underlying page code or the architectural code. And so if that code isn't disciplined or doesn't have best practices or standards, particularly that are shared across different application teams that you have, experimentation becomes very challenging. For what should be easy, it can suddenly become a more rigorous type of process. An example of that is I had a dev on my team who was becoming frustrated because he found that different devs on different teams weren't using a consistent class or ID structure. So he was having to manually do a lot of things in order to generate a test. So one simple example, but it sort of points to the larger picture. Like, as you think about these tools, there's a degree of transformation even internally that might be necessary to arrive at the desired scale or impact that you're looking for.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you also touched on this idea that maybe it's oversimplified, but you know, a lot of people are expecting when you flip the switch, as you said, that all of a sudden, you know, the revenue is going to pour in and but Amazon did it or whatever. And all of a sudden it's just the easy button, so to speak. But, you know, we're talking about several things here. I mean, you know, several of which you already mentioned. We're also dealing with, I mean, this is, I treat it as a scientific process of, you know, not only does the technology and the data have to align, but our first test may not work as expected, right? That's why we make hypotheses and, you know, and test them and revisit and all that stuff. So how do you manage the expectations there of, okay, well, we invested X amount of, you know, resources, dollars, whatever the case may be. This is going to take time. It's going to pay off because we know it pays off. But like, how do you manage that with leadership and really, you know, and I guess everyone that has those expectations set on them as well?
Yeah, it can be a challenge, right? It can be tough. The way that I've approached doing that is, one, getting a sense and feel for how well is this this technology or capability really understood. Like, what you just said, I work very hard to sort of clarify what are the expectations. So I can proactively identify if if my leadership or exec team has a clear understanding or not, because then that informs what degree of like education and awareness do I need to provide as I think about my own communication to them or the positioning of this capability and the updates that I provide.
Yeah.
So I think a big part of it is just that. It's I try to be I like to be very transparent and upfront with things, whether it's in goal setting or when we talk about sort of expectations about, you know, if we start here and we have a vision state that looks like X, let's say, you know, a vision state is a enterprise wide scaled, you know, experimentation program. You want to be very clear about what are those milestones that get you there and what will performance look like from here to there. So I think it's about addressing any potentially incorrect or maybe uninformed expectations about, yes, digital experimentation is a fantastic tool. It provides a lot of benefits. But to your point, or what I've run into is trying to educate the organization at large, you know, experimentation specifically is not a binary win-lose type capability. It's really about getting data to understand your visitors and their experience and learning to understand better that you then plug back into, you know, your product and your experience development. So when necessary, I try to refocus what the goal of it is, if that's sort of maybe not as well understood. Yeah. Particularly in organizations where it's new.
Well, and then to build on that, maybe almost the inverse question there is, like, you mentioned, you know, the vision as well. And I think, you know, that's for those leaders out there that kind of understand the value of personalization and some of these other experimentation things, you know, they may not, they all need the vision set. I guess the question here is, you know, how do you set a ambitious yet realistic enough vision so that, you know, you need to get the buy-in of everyone involved. You want to motivate everyone, and yet you don't want to set it so ambitious that it feels like it's not achieving those, even though, again, over time it will continue to grow and get better. So, you know, how do you look at setting goals in that context?
Yeah. Again, it can be sort of tough. And I think there's an element of dynamicism, yeah, you know, within that answer, because a lot of it's going to be influenced, you know, by the culture and the environment that, you know, you might find yourself in. But yeah, but just, like, you know, generally speaking, you know, goal setting, I think, extremely critical. And we all set goals all the time and sort of talk and think about it. What my approach and what I would weigh in here to say is that I think it's important to spend that time upfront to really understand where is it you're trying to go with, let's continue to use digital experimentation. You know, if you're bringing something new into an organization, it's important to think very clearly and critically about, well, what's the ultimate vision state for this and why, right? And you start getting into, you know, there's a lot of things you could talk about there, and the size of the organization, what's the right sort of model to sort of use. So I'll give an example. At one place I was at when I brought in digital experimentation, it was very clear that in order to achieve, you know, scale for the capability, we would have to federate the model out. So we would have to empower product teams to do it themselves. But, you know, so that was the goal. So I was able to, you know, clarify that, you know, set that goal, but then also showcase and build that roadmap and help people understand that the path from there to here will probably take, you know, X amount of time. In this case, it was like a 24 to 36 month type of roadmap with certain milestones in between. So I think that goal setting is just about coming up, I think, to what you're saying, a realistic vision or goal. I think it's important not to sandbag it. So it's a very easy temptation for people to set a very easy goal or small goal because they think it will be easy to get approved, it'll be easy to get budget. But that becomes a trap, because if you get people aligned around a very simple goal and then you achieve it, and now you're ready for the next step. So let's use an example of if you had created a team for experimentation and you've created a center of excellence, which is great, but you know that to really achieve the desired vision, which is scale, you need a federated model. Well, once you achieve that COE, the step for that next phase, if you will, is large. It's not just, it's not a very simple problem to solve. There's a lot of change management involved. There's a lot of process management that needs to change. It sort of reverberates through the organization. And so you may have set yourself up for failure if you set your goal too close, because now you're having to go back to the well of your exec team or whatever else and sort of resell this whole idea to them, which could be a challenge. Inverse of having too ambitious a goal, right? Which is too unrealistic, and maybe you lose credibility.
Yeah. And so that kind of leads to this, you know, how do you, I mean, sometimes selling the the idea of experimentation. And again, you know, we're going to run some tests and some are going to work and some are not going to work as well as we anticipated. But the idea is we win more than we don't win over time and get better and better. But that also means you have to kind of sell the idea of continuous improvement, which is, yeah, we don't just set a goal and achieve it and then we win and set it and forget it, right? It's like, so how do you, is continuous improvement something that needs to get that you've, you know, been able to sell in at the same time? Like when do you work that concept in to be most effective?
Mm-hmm. I try to work it in early. So again, sort of depending on circumstance, one of the ways that I've approached this is, you know, try to get something up and running. Ideally you want to get some wins under your belt so you can sort of showcase some value very, very yeah. early as you're sort of making the larger pitch or explaining the larger vision. So it helps to sell that if you have some momentum up front, which I don't think is rocket science. I think a lot of people out there get it. But in terms of the continuous improvement, I think it's very important. And so I've worked at incorporating that in more around a methodology of iteration. So again, trying to be very transparent, particularly with an executive leadership team, so I'm setting the right expectation to help them understand, again, that the phases of progression that lead from where we are now to where we want to be. So an idea of however you can sort of tie it together, so it'd be sort of tactical. If we talk about experimentation, you know, I would use the strategy of one, making sure they're aware that it's a volume-based success type model. So the more testing you do, the more wins you're going to get, the more learnings that you get, the more value you're now able to realize and plug back into your overarching product development lifecycle. So being very clear that upfront and then helping them understand what's required at each of those stages or phases in order to achieve, again, the volume and then the results, I think helps to sort of showcase for them where we're going. I found when you're able to provide a map in that respect, it helps gain trust and buy-in that you have a purposeful and methodical approach to what you're doing. And then you're establishing these milestones that you're then able to come back periodically and sort of showcase how you're performing against them. So it all becomes a very traceable and measurable type process that leads to this idea of sort of continuous improvement and continuous iteration.
Yeah, I love that. Well, Michael, thanks so much for joining. One last question before we wrap up here. What advice would you give to other leaders about, you know, some of the things we talked about, you know, setting goals and aligning incentives to drive successful transformations or other improvements in their organizations?
Yeah, I think one, goal alignment, intrinsically important. You know, achieving cross-department goals, you know, and being aligned with other teams that you're dependent on, particularly at the enterprise level and expecting it to be perfect, is very aspirational. You know, the larger the team, the more difficult that becomes. But I think, you know, what we can all do, something I try to do a lot with our partners, is understand what's important to the other folks that you need to work with, whether it's technology, whether it's other product teams, whether it's analytics or UX, whatever. Understand what are their goals, and then you just find common ground. So again, I don't think any of this is super complex. It's fairly common sense. But it's important because it's an easy step to avoid. It's easy for us to all be focused in our own silo and our own goals. So yeah. I would recommend get alignment with your partners, understand what's important to them, find that common ground, find out where you can build shared goals. Even at the shared OKR level is a very powerful lever to use. And then as you're able to sort of showcase how you fit within, and again, from a capability standpoint, if you offer a service, like if I offer digital experimentation, it's finding out how and helping them understand how what I do helps them be successful in what they're trying to do. So yeah. I think wrapping it together like that is very, very helpful while being, again, like I said earlier, being very transparent about what you're doing, where you're going, and setting the right expectation with your audience is a fantastic way of going after that. Yeah. But before we end, I just want to say, Greg, I really do appreciate the opportunity to join you and talk about this a little bit today. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Well, yeah, again, I'd like to thank Michael Vanderhoof, Director of Product Management at Charles Schwab, for joining the show. You can learn more about Michael and Charles Schwab by following the links in the show notes. Thanks again for listening to The Agile Brand, brought to you by Tech Systems. If you enjoyed the show, please take a minute to subscribe and leave us a rating so that others can find the show more easily. You can access more episodes of the show at www.gregkilstrom.com. That's GregKilstrom.com. While you're there, check out my series of best-selling Agile brand guides covering a wide variety of marketing technology topics, or you can search for Greg Kilstrom on Amazon. The Agile brand is produced by Missing Link, a Latina-owned, strategy-driven, creatively-fueled production co-op. From ideation to creation, they craft human connections through intelligent, engaging, and informative content. Until next time, stay agile.
The Agile brand.